Somewhere when I was a teenager, I hurt my back badly, and it healed improperly, and some things happened, and a disc deteriorated over some time, and the disc has self-fused, and it's not my low back, but it's kind of just above that area, and so I always have problems with my back. And the doctor said, someday the pain will get to the point where you'll want me to do surgery, but meanwhile, we'll just keep it like it is. Well, what happens is little bone spurs grow off of there, and then they hit the muscles, and the muscles are getting atrophied because I protect that area of the back, and then I weigh too much, and all those other things that interact. But the doctor said you can do these exercises. They won't cure it, but they'll help you get out of bed in the morning, or, you know, if you get in trouble, and if this happens, you take these medications, and you do this other thing. And if you do this all, then, or we can go in and we can cut and we can trim that all up and fuse it and make it, but it's already sort of self-fused at this point. So anyway, he said what you don't want to do is any real heavy lifting. But you know, when you're 6'8" and you weigh 300 pounds and you're a tough guy and you're strong and you see small women and children lifting heavy objects, and it's just kind of an attack on my manhood, and so I have to go fix things and repair things and pick things up and lift things and be manly because, I don't know, because I'm weird. And so I just decide to do that sometimes, even though I know what the consequences are, even though I know what's going to happen, even though I know when. So last Sunday night, after most of you had left, realized that this place needed to be cleaned up, and Eric had Elliot sound asleep on his shoulder, and so Eric wasn't going to do a lot of that, and Sue kind of came over and said, maybe if we turn on the lights, you could get everybody going, and I think, yeah, I could get everybody started, but that's not how I think. I think that Sue was actually asking me to clean up all the mess, and so I started doing that, and that's foolishness. That's absolutely foolish. It's foolish for me to do it because I already know what's going to happen. Like, I know that I can get away with it. Sometimes I'm lucky and I get away with it, but I know it's just stupid. It's dumb for me to do that. It's just foolish. It's flat out foolish. But I love what the village looks like on Sunday night. And when you walk into this place and it's bare room without chairs or art or sound equipment or any of this stuff, whenever that happens, like, we could just have, you know, everybody grab a chair when you walk in and acoustic music, and we could make this a lot easier. But there's something beautiful about what happens here, and it's been my dream, and I know it's Eric's dream and has been Eric's dream to make this a beautiful place, a place that's worshipful, a place that reflects us as a community. And of course, that takes a lot of setup, and it takes a lot of teardown, and it has to happen by 9 o'clock, because at 9 o'clock the janitor comes and closes the door, whether or not we're ready, and locks it up and goes to bed. And so we have to have it all done by 9 o'clock. That's our agreement with these wonderful people who lease us the space. So I feel obligated. I feel obligated because it has to be done, and therefore I'm going to do it. And so last Sunday night, I did something really stupid. I took the ice chest over there, which was half full of ice still, and I put the stuff out, and then I brought it over to the sink, and I was going to pour it. And of course, it's bulky, and it's weird, and when you twist, and then you hear the pop, and then you know that it's going to hurt real bad for a while, and then it starts to spasm, and then it spasms really bad, and my legs start shaking, and John thinks I'm having a heart attack, so he's ready to call 911. And I say, no, I'm not having a heart attack, it's just my back hurts really badly right now. And then, you know, we kind of work our way through the pain, we go home, take muscle relaxants, pain pills, spend a day on those, which is always a fun day, and then we are back at it, sort of. And we forget that the next time it will happen again because Rod makes foolish choices. Now, I can appeal my case I can say, well, if I don't do it, no one will, but I've never actually tested that theory, you know? I could ask for help, but I don't do that. We could just not ever set this place up. I mean, that wouldn't solve the problem. I could listen to my doctor. I could lose weight. There's a lot of things I could do to help myself, but I've made a foolish choice. And so what happens is when I make this foolish choice, I always want to go back to people and look for sympathy, right? Like, I like that John was sympathetic because he has a concerned look on his face, and I like that. That feels good. That feels like he cares about me, and I know he does. And so it felt good in the moment, not nearly as good as how bad my back felt. I mean, it wasn't like an offsetting thing even, but it kind of feels good. And I could go back to my doctor and I could say, you know, it hurts when I do this. And the doctor could say, well, duh. I think I told you like 47 years ago to, well, not probably that many, 37 years ago, to not ever lift a heavy weight and twist at the same time. When you do that, you're just asking for. And I can say, yeah, but, and I can make all the excuses why I have to do it, and the doctor will just look at me and go, see, because the doctor's wise. And he understands how backs work. And he understands how my back works. And he's looked at x-rays and CAT scans and MRIs and all those other wonderful things. And he knows that there's a wise way for me to live. And he also knows that probably, if I go to him, that I've foolishly not taken his advice. Now, would have the right to laugh at me. Now, he's probably not real professional, but he would say, well, duh, I told you so. Mock me, laugh at me. Because you know what? What I'm doing is foolish. And I can justify it 1,000 different ways, but the truth is, it's foolish for me to do heavy lifting. So, by the way, from now on, I'm not doing any heavy lifting after Vespers. But this place does need to be cleaned up. Now, all of those of you who do not have bad backs, you know, I don't care what all your other excuses are, you don't really have any other excuses that aren't just as valid for the people who stay and clean up. So please stay and clean up for all of you who can. Now, for those of you who have bad backs or other physical ailments that keep you from doing it, you may not do it. And, you know, and you can say, well, I disagree with the value of having all this beautiful stuff here, so I don't want to participate, or no, you know, we can all decide that in community if we'd like. But the truth is, this is how the village is. Eric spends a lot of time setting up, so I really don't think he should have to tear it all down, although most nights at the very end of the evening, Eric and I are and Tricia are the last three people to leave, because sometimes there's a couple other people that hang around, but because we're really concerned about having this room completely cleaned up and put back in that little tiny room back there. So anyway, I'm not doing it anymore because I'm going to choose from now on to be wise. Now, I've been foolish for a long time, but I just thought you'd like to know that from now on, I'm choosing wisdom, the path of wisdom, in this particular area of my life. Now, there are lots of other areas of my life where I'm still, fighting to make those choices, but as of now, I'm not going to do any heavy lifting. I may carry some chairs over there because they're light enough, and, I can pick up anyway. There's always we can participate, but I'm just not doing any of the heavy lifting or any of the twisting, lifting things. So, just so you know. And I don't think Eric should have to either, but, you guys work that out. What happens is in Proverbs, we start looking at how wisdom, Proverbs 1, 22 through 33, wisdom cries out. It says in Proverbs 1, 20 to 33, wisdom calls aloud in the street. She raises her voice in the public squares. At the head of the noisy street, she cries out. The gateways of the city, she makes her speech. How long will you simple ones love your simple ways? How long will mockers delight in mockery and fools hate knowledge? If you had responded to my rebuke, I would have poured out my heart to you and made my thoughts known to you. But since you rejected me when I called and no one gave heed when I stretched out my hand, since you ignored all my advice and would not accept my rebuke, I, in turn, will laugh at your disaster. I will mock when calamity overtakes you. When calamity overtakes you like a storm, when disaster sweeps over you like a whirlwind, when distress and trouble overwhelm you, then you will call to me, but I will not answer. They will look for me, but they will not find me. Since they hated knowledge and did not choose to fear the Lord, since they would not accept my advice and spurned my rebuke, they will eat the fruit of their ways and be filled with the fruit of their schemes. For the waywardness of the simple will kill them, and the complacency of fools will destroy them. But whoever listens to me will live in safety and be at ease without fear of harm. Wisdom cries out. It's not that we don't know what's wise. A lot of times we walk around thinking, I have to make a decision, and we pretend, or we kind of take on this persona that says, I really don't know what the wise way is. I'm really just confused. Matter of fact, I guarantee you that 90% of the time when I hear people say I'm confused, what they really mean is I'm conflicted. We know what to do, we just don't want to do it. Because it's costly, because it's hard, because it doesn't seem like the easy way, because of all the other reasons. We use that word confused all the time. I use it. Well, I'm confused about what's going on in my back, and so I'm confused about what the doctor said. No, I'm not. I know exactly what the doctor said to do, and I know exactly how I should treat my body. I'm conflicted because I want to do this other thing, and I want to do this other thing, and I want to do this other thing well, so I'm just conflicted. And wisdom is crying out. It cries out from everywhere. Wisdom, it's kind of the whole, it cries out in the streets, and it's in our, it's sort of that street smart way of thinking, right? It's, people have street smarts. People who, it's called when you just, you know the right thing to do, like, and it kind of comes from that whole idea when you live on the street and you know how to avoid the cars and you know where to find food and you know what's going on, you're just smart about what to do. Public places where commerce and business are done, there's a wise way to do things and then there's the unwise way. In the entryways, in the normal paths of our life, wisdom is calling out. In the gateways, in the places of governance, wisdom is calling out. Wisdom is all around us. It's there. It's available to see. Most of us know exactly what the wise decision to make is and what the unwise decision to make is. When my father died, my friend Pete Russ came to me, and he became like a father to me, and one of the first things that he did was he bought some stock in my name. And he said, take this stock and invest it, or keep it invested, and it was stock that paid dividends, and he said, reinvest those dividends and take some money out of your check every week and buy some more stock with it, and someday you'll be very wealthy. My friend Pete passed away a couple years ago and was worth well over $1 million, and I'm not going to be worth well over $1 million because I sold that stock at some point when I thought I needed the money for some other thing in the moment, and I didn't invest wisely, and I didn't keep adding to it, and therefore I'm poor, and because I didn't take his advice. Now, I knew it was good advice when I heard it. It made sense to me. It wasn't like, wow, that's brilliant. I'd have never thought of that. It seemed like when Pete told me that made sense, that if you wanted to be wealthy someday, that was the way to do it. A little bit at a time, out of each check. Somebody asked me, you know, what would you do if you could do it all over again? I'd say I'd live on 80%, give away 10%, and invest 10%. You know, that's the old rule. It's just it's a simple rule. It's not like brilliant. That, by the way, that's your wisdom for tonight for all you people who are young. Write that down, you know, and by the way, give away the 10% first, because otherwise you never will, okay, because you'll always need it. But if you don't have it, and put the 10%, give away the 10% first of your paycheck, the second 10%, I mean, it's really crucial that you put that in investment, savings, stocks, bonds, whatever, that you do that second, because otherwise you'll spend it, and then spend all the rest, however you need to spend it. Do that, and someday you'll all be very wealthy, and then you'll tithe and and Eric and I will do well despite ourselves, and that will be good, you know. So, because you'll invest, and invest in ministry. That's just a wise way of living. That's shouted out to us. All around us, we see the wise way. Now, the wise way is often the hard way. I've mentioned that before. The wise way is not easy. It's not fun to live on 80%. It's a lot more fun to live on 100% of what you make than it is to live on 80%. But it's just a wiser way to live. And so that kind of wisdom is always being shouted out to us. So in the scripture that we're looking at tonight, wisdom, by the way, is just a wise way. I mean, it's the whole wise way. It's not like this is God saying, thou shalt do this. These aren't like commands. This is just that normally if people do these kinds of things, good things happen. But we all know, of course, that good things happen to bad people and bad things happen to good people. So it's not like a guarantee. I'm not giving you a guarantee that if you do this, then you're all going to be fabulously wealthy someday. No, it's just a wise way. And normally when you take the wise way, good things happen. And so that's kind of that whole pattern. If we can flip. The foolish response to that, there's even though wisdom is constantly, like that's our excuse, right? Wisdom, we just didn't know what was wise. Well, that's not really true. Wisdom is always calling out. It's always speaking to us. It's all around us, particularly in community, particularly in this community of Christ followers. There's a lot of wisdom here. Listen for it. Three kinds of fools. First one that this mentions are simpletons. They're the naive ones. And by the way, this is a moral naivete. They're seducible. The word seducible, silly, comes to mind here. Some of us are foolish in the simple way. We're just, literally, it doesn't make sense to us what makes sense to 99.9% of the populace. In other words, we're just confused. But bear in mind that what this is really talking about is our morality. We do immoral things. We steal because, not because it feels wrong or bad, but just because we thought we needed it and it was available, and we're just naive, and then when we get caught, we're surprised, we're stunned. Wow, I didn't know I couldn't take that. I remember being in business, we always had employees ripping us off, or trying to, and my job was to catch them because I was the financial officer. And so one of the things that I did was when I caught them, was kind of quiz them about why they had taken this. And the assumption was, well, this is a really big company, and you got lots of stuff, and you didn't need it all, and it was okay for me to take it because everybody does it. I mean, it's just, they just didn't even know that that was a really wrong thing, that that was a horrible, hideous thing, and then they were just stunned that I would fire them for taking stuff and pretending it was theirs when it wasn't, it was ours. And so it's that kind of simple, naive. Matter of fact, the word, I really like this description, is roomy in the head. I mean, if you actually look down at the Hebrew, it goes way down to people who are just a little roomy in the head, okay? And what, you're an airhead when you're roomy in the head, right? Right? We all know what that means, okay? And that's just, like, there are a lot of us who are just kind of roomy in the head. We're just going, breezing along through life, and we don't realize what wisdom requires of us. Wisdom actually has to, there's a requirement that we have to think, that we have to actually process. And so for those of you who are just going blithely through life, thinking it's all just going to work out peachy keen at the end, ask yourself, am I a bit roomy in the head? Better, ask other people around you, am I a bit roomy in the head? And how can you help me be less roomy, you know, so that actually some of those brain cells actually go to work and start gathering information and data. So that's kind of the picture that we have of this first kind of foolish person. It's not, But again, all of that has a moral component to it. And so it's not like we're, I'm not just unjustly making fun of people who don't have the brain power to do things, because it does involve choice. It involves moral choice. So you're without excuse, okay? Remember, wisdom is calling, we're without excuse. The second kind are mockers. They're the deceivers. They're derisive. They're scornful. They actually know what's wise, but they just make fun of it. You meet a lot of people that make fun of wisdom, make fun of the wise path. Any of you who've worked, I worked in the auto parts world for a long time and worked with a lot of mechanics and people like that, and you know, they were cussing and swearing and yelling at me, and they were sure, like when I would ask them to clean up their language or guard their language around me, I found it inappropriate or whatever, they would really let me have it, and they'd make fun of me, they'd mock me, they were just scornful toward me. But this kind of fool is—it's more than just that. It's to make mouth at. Okay, when you're a mocker, you're making mouth at. What that really means was, it's like somebody trying to speak a foreign language. Okay, who doesn't know the foreign language? It's like me trying to speak Spanish, and people are just, real Spanish speakers are falling on the floor laughing because I'm not really using the word correctly, and so I'm saying, the buffalo's roller skating in the herd when I think I'm saying, can I have a drink of water, and so it just, because I'm not using the words right, and I'm not saying it right, and I'm not doing right, and then it's the laughter that comes about that, like it's the people who are in who go, right, you really don't even know what you're talking about, right? That's the kind of mocking of the wise way that happens. It's sort of a, I don't want that to be right, but I want to tear you down, I want to bring you down, and I'll laugh at you, I'll mock you, I'll make fun of the way you're going about life. Those of us who believe that hanging on to virginity until our wedding night often have experienced that kind of derision, that kind of laughter. I remember all my a whole bunch of friends at work saying to me, we were having a discussion and they said, everybody does it before they get married. And I said, that's not true, I didn't. And you should have heard the laughter. You should have heard him fall down, giggling, thinking that was hilarious, that somebody, a man, wouldn't have sex before he got married. They just thought that was hilarious. And they mocked me, they made fun of me. And that's the kind of the picture that we're talking about, that kind of foolishness. So it's not foolishness that's just foolishness without power. And that foolishness is a powerful foolishness because it kind of invites us into believing that everybody does this thing, or that all, that we're just animals, that we're not made in the image of God. The third kind is the choosers, I call them. They're the people who are foolish because they have the knowledge. They know the right thing to do, and they simply choose not to do it. They simply say, I don't want to do that. That's the kind of foolishness that I've practiced with my bad back, right? I know what I'm supposed to do. I'm not stupid. The doctors explained it. I have all the knowledge. I've got a whole, raft of reports and ways and, doctors' explanations of how, and I've had constant reminders from Eric and others in the community. My wife just rolls her eyes when my back goes out because she says, well, duh, you didn't know that was gonna happen. See, she's used to it because I'm used to it, because it's not like I lack knowledge. They've all made it abundantly clear, right? But I just choose not to do it. I choose not to do it. And that's a tough kind of foolishness to defeat, because if you actually know what you're supposed to do, if you know what's right, and what's good, then doing it really, and choosing not to give, to walk the wise way. So wisdom rebukes us. The word rebuke is to reprove, to be right. So wisdom comes along and says, no, that's not the wise way to act. Rod, lifting the ice chest on Sunday night, whatever benefits you get from that, that's not appropriate. That's not what you're supposed to do. That's not wise behavior. So it rebukes me. And there's an expectation that when wisdom calls, when wisdom rebukes, that I'll respond, that I should respond to the wise way. I should go, right, bingo, I get it now, I won't do that anymore. Because wisdom always makes itself known. It makes itself known in our lives, in our actions, as we go about. One of the great questions is the Dr. Phil question, right? How's that working for you? If you hang around the village too long, and some of you have, then you get that question all the time, right? It just happens, you know, you're just gonna keep hearing it. How's that working for you? Is your way working? Because wisdom calls out to us. It says, it makes itself known, and the way it does that is, how's your way of life? And then how's the way of life that you would have if you listen to the rebuke? Wisdom actually pours out its heart. Wisdom has heart. It has a passion to be known. So it pours itself out to us. Wisdom is not just calling out on the streets, but when we actually heed the rebuke of wisdom, it listens to us and it pours out itself into us. So what happens is you get not just the wisdom of how to react about a bad back, but just how to take care of your body in general, or just how to do all the things that are wise about lifting and all that good stuff. So it actually gives you more information, more data. It's willing to pour itself out. Matter of fact, and it's not just pouring, by the way, the word is actually translated gushing. You know, like it's just, like if you open yourself up to wisdom, you know, you're just gonna get inundated with the wise way of living. It makes its heart known, it makes itself known. It stretches out its hand, and that's that sign of, like it will push its way in, it's reaching for us. And finally, it gives advice. It gives lots of good, solid advice. Wisdom has that capacity. That's what wisdom's rebuke is all about. And so we can listen to that, or we can be foolish. If you flip what happens is, when we choose foolishness, and by the way, foolish in Proverbs normally translates to be fat. To simply be really fat. It's to just take, and it's taken from the whole idea that to be wise is to be, you know, in shape and organized and structured and disciplined and all those wonderful things, and that foolishness is just to lose control and to just be fat. And so wisdom gets its last laugh. Because if we follow the foolish way, first of all, the silence is deafening. Eventually, we stop hearing wisdom. We stop hearing wisdom as wise. Wisdom stays silent. Wisdom doesn't talk anymore. It doesn't speak to us. If we keep making the wrong choice time after time after time, eventually we don't hear wisdom anymore. The silence just becomes absolutely deafening. Disaster comes quickly. First of all, it says it overtakes us, so that the disaster of our life, it comes out of nowhere. And it comes like a whirlwind, in other words, like a hurricane. It just comes in and sweeps us, destroys. You read something about the tornadoes going around through the Midwest, and you just like, boom, they just come in, they pick everything up, they destroy it. It's gone. Or like the flood, we've seen the effects of the Great Flood, and it just all comes at once. The levee breaks, we're underwater. Everything is destroyed. So the disaster of the foolish way comes quickly. even if it doesn't look like it's going to come. Like, even when we're sure it's not going to come, even when we're sure that our way is the wise way and it's going to be okay and we're going to cheat it, we're going to somehow survive. And then wisdom no longer answers us, it can't be found, and we're forced to eat the fruit of our ways. I think that's the hardest part of choosing the foolish way, that you have to live with the decision you make. So when I make the bad decision about how to treat my back, then I have to live with that bad decision. I have to live with the reality that I'm going to really be in a lot of pain for a couple days and it's really going to hurt. But someday, you know, it's going to, and it's happened before where I really tear it up and I end up in the hospital and I spend a week in the hospital, and because, like, disaster's coming, like I'm, you know, and then I have nowhere to turn. I can't say, well, you know, it's everybody else's fault. No, I'm actually forced to eat the fruit of my bad decisions. We're always forced to eat the fruit of our bad decisions. Go ahead and flip. Or we can listen to wisdom. And if we listen to wisdom, the way of wisdom, there's three, they're not promises, but they're three realities. Whoever listens to me will live in safety, be at ease, without fear of harm. We'll live in safety. That safety is the concept of a city of refuge, a place to run to, a place where you can go and be completely safe. That it's the cities of refuge are found in Scripture, and those were places where if you were being chased and attacked, you simply went to those places and you were safe. No one could hurt you or attack you in those places. And so to live in safety is that idea that if you choose the wise way, then God keeps you safe. Now, I want to be careful how we think about that word safety, because a lot of times when we think about safety, we think, I won't be scared. And that's not true. He's not promising you that you won't be scared. He's saying you'll be safe. He's not saying that you won't suffer and that you won't struggle. He's saying that you'll be safe. In other words, that wisdom, that living the wise way, that God protects us in that place, that we live in safety. That the second part is that life is easier. We live at ease. The word is kind of loll about, you know, just kind of sitting in the hammock kind of peace. Like, we live at rest. Again, that's not okay, if I just do the wise thing for a while, then everything's going to work out just fine. Living at ease, however, you know, I think my friend Pete, who invested wisely, and, you know, when he had $1 million in the bank, he was more at ease with his thing than those of us who live paycheck to paycheck. And if we don't get that paycheck, life is horrible, right? It's just true that if we live wisely, there's greater ease in our lives, greater comfort. And then live without fear of harm. And again, I want to be careful with this idea of living with, you know, like, okay, if I just live wisely, then I'll never get hurt. Not true. Again, these are generalities. Generally, normally, that's true, that we live without fear of harm. But notice it's not live without harm. It's live without fear of harm. And fear is the thing that often traps us and kills us and destroys us. And this is kind of the startling fear that it's talking about. When the word that's used is startled, to be startled. And so if we live wisely, we don't live with those unexpected, ooh, out of the clear blue sky, suddenly, bang, my life is a disaster. Now, there's also something about living without fear of harm, that has the context of that when harm comes, I know that ultimately I'm taken care of. I mean, the beauty of walking wisely and remembering that the fear of the Lord was the beginning of wisdom, if we remember back to that, right? If that the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, if that was the beginning, then the end is to live fearlessly because I'm in relationship with God. I am with God. Deuteronomy 33:12 says, "Let the beloved of the Lord rest secure in him, for he shields him all day long, and the one the Lord loves rests between his shoulders." Isn't that beautiful? That my rest, my expectation is that I will be with God. Isaiah 33, "He who walks righteously and speaks what is right, who rejects gain from extortion and keeps his hand from accepting bribes, who stops his ears against plots of murder and shuts his eyes against contemplating evil, this is the man who will dwell on the heights, whose refuge will be the mountain fortress. His bread will be supplied and water will not fail him. Your eyes will see the king in his beauty and view a land that stretches afar." So there's this beautiful concept that when we walk wisely, when we walk in the paths that are wise, that we're also walking in God's way, and that I'm not afraid. I remember when Tom was in the hospital and facing death, and I asked him, "Are you afraid?" And he said, "No, because I know who's waiting for me on the other side. I am. I mean, I don't want to die. I don't want to go through this. It's scary, but I know what's on the other side. I know who's there for me because he's here with me now." And I just remember knowing that to be true, knowing that to be true for Tom, knowing that to be true for me, and wanting that to be true for everyone that I meet. That you just rest in that place where I know that God holds me and he doesn't let go. And even when I live foolishly, and even when I've made foolish choices, God rescues me from my foolish choices and allows me at any time to begin living wisely, to begin that process of living wisely, and to do that and to offer myself to him. Foolishness, you know, wisdom does have the last laugh. I mean, if we act foolishly to the very end, if we reject God, if we reject his path, then wisdom does have the last laugh. It laughs at us, it mocks us, it makes fun of us. It says, "See, you could have," and that's really sad. But the truth is, God has the last laugh. And God is love, and he draws us to him, and he rescues us from our bad decisions and our foolishness, and he helps us as we choose to walk wisely. Comments, questions? Thoughts? One of those, yeah, there's some that say it's Jesus, is wisdom, you know. Well, all good things come from God, so yes, God is wise. And so if we're doing wise things, wisdom comes from God and is God. That's part of his nature. So yes and no. I prefer to think of wisdom as the entity. I don't know. I mean, it says a God in the Psalms, it says that God mocks us and laughs at us when we continually choose evil. But I don't, you know, my experience of God is through Jesus, and he's sad and he weeps with me and he pulls me from evil. It's a great question. Anyone else?
I don't have a fear of death. I have a fear of the system.
it's interesting that we often feel that way, right? Like, I don't want to have to suffer, and I don't want to have... I remember a friend of mine, his mother was going through some really tragic things, and I said, man, I could never do that. And my friend just said, God's not asking you to. He's asking my mother to. And he's giving her what she needs to go through it. And I think in that moment, when you, if you would ever have to go through that, then God gives you that which you need. But yeah, that's always our fear. It's hard to trust that. Yeah. Anyone else? Let's close in prayer. Father, thank you for wisdom. Father, in so many areas of our lives and in so many ways, we've made foolish choices and we've walked foolishly. And it's hurt our community and it's hurt our community's witness, this kingdom that we are trying to establish on your behalf to the world around us. Father, I pray that we would choose wisely, that we would choose to live wisely, that you would walk us in that, that you would truly pour out wisdom on us as we seek it. Father, keep us from harm. Keep us safe. Teach us your path. I pray it in Jesus' name. Amen. Our response, if you brought an offering, please give the offering. If you're visiting, there's no expectation that you would do that. If you wish someone pray over you because of sin in your own life, the effect of sin in your life, other people's sin, just struggles, please go back to that chair in the corner and you can sit there and someone will come and pray over you. And if you know Jesus and you are a follower of him and you are attempting to choose the wise way because you fear God, then go take bread and dip it in the juice, and as you eat it and drink it, remember that his body was broken for you, his blood was shed for you, so that you could truly live.